Is it on? I'm probably loud enough anyway. Maybe. I wanted to do something a little bit different this morning. First of all, I'd like to thank, Dieter for inviting me up here. You're a brave man. I appreciate getting to know everybody in this church, and it's been a great ride. George constantly tried to get me to come here, and I didn't. And then when George passed, now here I am and doing a lot of things in the church, and I really enjoy it, getting to know the friends and getting to know more people. What I wanted to do a little bit different, I asked Georgia to stay up here with me. I wanted to sing some more songs. I thought, well, I'm a song leader for the church. So what I'd like to do is tell you just a couple of stories of some of the songwriters, some of the hymns that were written in the 1700s, the 1800s, are some of the songs we still sing today every Sunday. Many of them were not written by a songwriter who sat in a studio or in an office and sat down to write a song, but many of them were written through life's experience, what they had experienced in their life. And the two songs that I picked for us to sing today, and you're going to sing them with me. I'm not singing by myself. But actually were number one and number two songs for years and years. And they both have a tremendous story. The people who wrote them have a tremendous story. I was very surprised to see when I talked to Lauren earlier and said I'd like to have the words to these songs up, he said, that song's not in our hymnal. But yet, for years and years in the United States, it was the number two song sang in churches and sang across America. Now, the other one, everybody's going to know, it's still sung estimated 10 million times every year in America. It wasn't written in America. It wasn't from a person from America, but a tremendous story about a guy. Most of you probably have heard it, maybe, but I'm going to tell it again. And I thought about what could have been their inspiration to live the life that they lived, to go through the things that they went through. And I thought about, I came upon John chapter 15, the 12th verse. And Jesus said, this is my commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. Greater love had no one than this, that a person will lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you slaves, for the slave does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, because all things I have heard from my Father I have made known to you. You did not choose me. I chose you and appointed you that you would go and bear fruit, and that your fruit would remain, so that whatever you ask of the Father in my name, he may give it to you. This is my command. This is my command to you, that you love one another. Both of these men were, one had an experience of being a Christian and having a lot of things happen in his life that you would think would have made him a bitter person. The other one is the story of a man who was about as bad as you could get, but turned his life around and became a minister in England. One thing that just jumped off the page at me when I read this was verse 16, where he said, you did not choose me. I chose you. God loves us despite who we are, not because of who we are. Joseph Scriven was born in the early 1800s. In 1844, he had graduated from college and went home to be with his sweetheart and to marry the love of his life. The day before they were to get married, Joseph's wife-to-be the next day was riding her horse along the river. And something spooked the horse, and she got bucked off the horse. She fell in the river and hit her head on a rock, and it knocked her out. And because she was unconscious, she was underwater, she drowned. Joseph got there shortly after she drowned, and as they were helping her get her body out of the river, he said, I looked into the face of the person I would be married to the next day, and it wasn't going to happen. He turned to God and wanted guidance from God, didn't know what to do. And within a short period of time, he moved from Ireland, where he had grown up and where he'd lived all his life, just north of Dublin. And he moved to Canada, right along the shores of Lake Ontario in a small town called Port Hope, where he began to help everybody in need. If someone couldn't chop wood for their fireplace, he would go and help them do that. If someone was crippled or somebody just couldn't get out to do anything, elderly, the widows, everybody. In fact, there was a story about Joseph Scriven that someone was talking and said, oh, here comes Joseph Scriven. He was carrying his saw and his saw horse to go and help somebody. And they said that he would help anybody in need, and he became known actually as the Good Samaritan in Port Hope. But he, as he was carrying that, someone said, "Wow, I'd sure like to hire him to come and help me. I could use a young man who wasn't a drunk and wasn't a boozer and would come and help me saw wood." And the guy said, "Sorry, you won't get Joseph Scriven. He'll only help people who cannot return the favor. That's the only people he'll help. He won't help anybody else." Well, he helped tutor a retired sea captain's kids and nieces and nephews, and he helped a lot of the kids he was a teacher by trade, actually. So he would help them a lot. And he happened to fall in love with another lady there, a young girl that was actually the sea captain's niece. When he fell in love with her, they decided to get married. She had come to know the Lord. She professed her faith in Christ and wanted to be baptized in March in Canada in a pond. I don't know what, if you know about Canada in March and water, just the water around here is plenty cold. So she was baptized, and shortly after she developed pneumonia. Within a couple weeks of their wedding, despite Joseph Scriven's care and trying to take care of her, she passed away. So now this is twice in Joseph Scriven's life. He's almost gotten married, but didn't quite do it. He spent the rest of his life helping the widows, helping the poor, giving to everybody that he could in his little town of Port Hope. He could be seen walking up and down the roads of Port Hope, helping everybody that he could. Shortly after his second wife-to-be passed away, he found out that his mother was gravely ill back in Ireland. And he wrote her a poem. And the poem said, "What a friend we have in Jesus. All our sins and griefs to bear. What a privilege to carry everything to God in prayer." So here's a man who had every reason to become the grumpy, grouchy old man sitting on the porch, yelling at everybody who walked on his lawn, right? But he knew he had a friend. And that friend stuck with him through thick, through thin, through everything that he ever did. And in that poem that he wrote, "What a friend we have in Jesus." We're going to sing that song. "What a friend we have in Jesus." Yes. Yeah, sure. If you want to stand, you can stand. Marilyn says we're standing.
Oh,
It never goes perfect, does it? This morning's been kind of a rough morning already. I don't know how you ended up with such a little bit of snow, but I had to try to push the snow away from the front of my gate just so I could open it and get out. So we got quite a bit. And if you know, we live off grid, so the first thing I have to do is try to get all the snow off the panels so I can have some electricity. While my batteries are working fine, I don't want them to die during the day. This next one, I know you're going to recognize this, and a lot of you have probably heard this guy's story. It's great. John Newton was born in August 4th of 1725 in London. His father was John Newton Sr. and was a ship captain, and his mother was Elizabeth. And so dad was hardly ever home. He was out to sea all the time. Mom, Elizabeth, was a great Christian woman. And she took John and she taught him the Bible. They read the Bible together. She was a great Christian woman and really taught him a lot of Christian ethics and that. The only problem was, before his seventh birthday, his mom got tuberculosis and passed away. So after John's mom passed away, he ended up going to some schools, boarding schools, for a couple of years before he was taken out of those and sent to his dad. So John Newton had become quite an unruly child, undisciplined, unruly. Nobody could control him. So at the age of 11, his dad said, "I'm going to commission you to be on this ship with me, and you're going to start working at sea." So he went with his dad, and went to sea when he was 11. So he was still a pretty unruly child. He didn't get along with his father at all. His dad was very distant, very hard to talk to. So he went on five voyages with his dad across, back and forth and across to Africa and to other areas from England. His dad retired at the age of 42. So John came back to land, where he worked at a merchant office and until he was fired for disobedience and unruly acting. So he still continued to not get it just yet. Walking home from a friend's house in 1743, he stopped at the pub to have a drink or two, and some sailors from another Navy ship came and took him and said, "Now you're working for the Navy." So back in that day, it was very common for them. If they didn't have enough people to work on the Navy ships, they would send some of the crewmen into town. They would cruise through the pubs and bars, and they would find young men, and they'd say, "Guess what? You're working for us now." So that's how they would have enough guys. So he started out just scrubbing the deck and at the bottom. But he did work his way up to being a midshipman. But he did not get along with anybody still. Did not like what he was doing. He tried to desert. So they took him and they stripped him down to his waist. They tied him to the rails, and they beat him 8 dozen lashes. They gave him for trying to desert. So they call that being press ganged into working on a naval ship. And that the ship that he worked on was the HMS Harwick. So after he was whipped, he finally convinced his superiors that he would like to go on another ship called the Pegasus, which the Pegasus was just a goods and a slave trading ship. It was bound for Africa. So he convinced them to let him go over to the Pegasus and sail on the Pegasus for a while. Well, guess what? He didn't get along with anybody on the Pegasus either. So they dropped him off in Africa and said, "Here you go. Stay here." They left him there. And he began to work as a slave. Actually, he was attached to a slave owner who had a large crop of lemons, an orchard. So then he began to work for the slave owner's mistress slave. So he became a slave of a slave. So he had reached, he had really reached pretty much about the bottom of his barrel. He was down to the bottom. He became a servant to this slave mistress, and she was very cruel to him. Within a matter of a short time, he was beaten several times. He was shackled. His clothes became torn and you know, barely covered him anymore. He'd really been to the bottom of the barrel. In the meantime, his father had heard of his plight and heard about where he was, so he sent a friend over to Africa to try to find his son. And when he got there, he found him, and he brought him back. On the return voyage, though, and this is interesting, he did begin to start reading the Bible. He did try to figure out, he went back to what his mother had taught him, and he was below the ship when there was a terrible storm off the coast of Ireland. And when he got up to the top from below, he got up just in time to see somebody swept off the ship. So he went and grabbed the wheel, and for 11 hours he fought this storm, and the whole time he was praying for God's mercy and God to help him. God help us. You know, he was just really praying for God's mercy. And this sort of changed his life, but not really. A little bit. He decided he would stop cussing and stop gambling. But that was about it. He refused to stop working in the slave trade. And he was the captain of a number of ships. And I'm sure we've all heard the stories of the conditions on these ships. They would lay the slaves so close side by side in rows down below, would not let them come up above. They would lay there for months as they were sailing across the ocean. There was as many as 600 of them on one ship. And, during Newton's life, during that, he said he couldn't handle the guilt of looking in their face and seeing the face of people that he was ruining their lives. He was destroying them. If one of them became sick down below, they'd just throw them off. Just throw them off into the ocean. They didn't want anybody else to get sick. So if they were sick, they'd just pick them up, take them, and throw them off into the ocean. And so he began to deal with a lot of this guilt for what he did to other people. He was back on shore again, working for a merchant again, a little later in his life. You know, and all these things happened by the time he was 23 years old. So from 11 to 23, pretty rough life, right? Well, he couldn't deal with the guilt that he had from what he had been doing for so many years. So in desperation, he began to read and study the Bible. He looked at a lot of the writings of Martin Luther, the Reformation, and those things, and he discovered something. He discovered grace. He found out that God loved him despite who he was. That what God was going to love him whether he did that or he didn't do that, and he couldn't stop God from loving him. And this really did change his life. Now his life was completely changed. He didn't know what to do. He did get rid of the guilt. He realized he could live without that guilty feeling if he came to Christ and knew the Lord. So he decided he wanted to start telling everybody. So what he did is he went ahead and went to be a pastor. He studied for a few years while he was working for that merchant, and then he became the pastor of a church in Olney, which is just about, I think, about 50 miles north of London. And that was the first church where he went and pastored. He did pastor another church down in London, But he became a very, very prominent preacher, very powerful preacher, a very good pastor. And the church got so full that they had to add more seats around, just trying to get the people coming in because he had such a powerful message. His message was really different than a lot of the other, that anybody else of his day, because he used his personal story, he used his life's story to preach his sermons. And it was really amazing. He just completely filled the church, both of the churches. After they added the gallery, the church was still too small. In 1773, on New Year's Eve, he was looking for a message to try to bring to the people, to get them to begin being thankful for God, for what God has provided. And that, and in his message, he talked about the prodigal son. He talked about the blind man that was healed. And he wrote a poem. And you know what it says, huh? That's right. He wrote a poem at the end of his message, Amazing Grace. How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. What an amazing song. Now, that song didn't really get anywhere at the time. It actually had a different title. Somehow, and they don't even know how, it made its way from England to the U.S. And that's where it picked up the music. And that's where it picked up the tune that we all know so much today. That song is played over 10 million times every year. Still the number one song ever. What an experience his life was. And this poem was his expression of what he had been through. And it rings in our hearts, so true. And I want to sing that song. We definitely will stand for this. Just so you know, the sixth verse of this song, when we've been down, when we've been there 10,000 years, John Newton did not write that. That verse was written by a lady who wrote the book, Uncle Tom's Cabin. She put that song in her book, but she added that verse to it. So we're going to sing the whole song and think about this man's life, what it meant, and what does Amazing Grace mean to you? Is there five? Okay. Right.
Sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found. Was blind, but now I see. Was grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. Thank you.
We're going to sing our response song, which is Victory in Jesus.